This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bill Raggio and Tom Jossin of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. They keep the Long War Journal, a detailed chronicle of these last decades in Afghanistan for the U.S. and ISAF forces, and now a detailed chronicle as those military and support forces leave the country and the Taliban on the march, not only in Afghanistan, but the threat is to the whole region. However, the larger question is transnational threat. In other words, what's in it for Europe? What's in it for the U.S. when Taliban take control of a country and it reverts to its medieval nature from the late 20th century? The question is Al-Qaeda and its kindred of Cain, ISIS. Tom, I start with you because this is a Guardian report in these last days from London. Afghanistan, it reads, could once again become a base for international terrorism, according to a former senior UK military commander who has described the withdrawal of Western troops as a strategic mistake. General Sir Richard Barons warned that attacks in Europe could be the outcome of groups reestablishing themselves in the country. The quote to BBC Radio 4, The World This Weekend. I don't believe it's in our own interest in making that decision to leave. We've not only, I think, sold the future of Afghanistan into a very difficult place, we've also sent a really unfortunate message to the West allies in the Gulf and Africa and Asia. He went on to say that he's most concerned of Afghanistan once again establishing itself as a base to launch attacks overseas. At this point, Tom, is there any change of the status of Al-Qaeda and its relationship with the Taliban? I remind everybody that the Taliban for some time has been denying that it has any links to Al-Qaeda. Any change in the presentation, Tom? Any boasting that you can see anywhere?
No, I mean, the Taliban continues to lie about Al-Qaeda. You know, one of their spokesmen actually recently claimed to a Jordanian journalist that Ayman al-Zawahiri who's the head of Al-Qaeda, doesn't even have a bayah or an oath of allegiance to the Taliban's emir. And that's flat false. I mean, it's obvious that he does. This is a very important, religiously binding oath of allegiance. It's a blood oath that the head of Al-Qaeda has maintained to the head of the Taliban since before 9/11. And they maintain that to this day. And that blood oath is of utmost importance to Al-Qaeda because it's where they draw the religious legitimacy for their global jihad. And the Taliban has done nothing to restrain Al-Qaeda or break with Al-Qaeda in any way. Al-Qaeda right now has been for years, as we've reported in Long War Journal, deeply enmeshed in the Taliban insurgency. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda are blood brothers. They're fighting to retake the country from the Afghan government now. They fought together against the Americans and NATO forces for so many years. And there's no indication the Taliban is going to do anything to break with Al-Qaeda. I would say that the Al-Qaeda threat obviously has evolved greatly since 9/11. You know, on 9/11, for example, all 19 hijackers were trained in Afghanistan. That was the central headquarters for that plot, contrary to what some Taliban apologists claim. Afghanistan was central to Al-Qaeda's planning infrastructure and training infrastructure at the time. It's definitely evolved since then, and so now you have threats coming from other countries as well. So it's not the case where Al-Qaeda would need Afghanistan, for example, to train another team coming after the West. However, that could happen in Afghanistan. It's just not as necessary as it was on 9/11.
Bill, there is a report from London, and these things are moving stories, that Joe Biden, the Biden administration, has been warned of ISIS threats forming in Afghanistan. Do you see any indication of ISIS consolidating its authority in any part of Afghanistan that's falling to the Taliban?
The Islamic State really is not the primary threat in Afghanistan, nor is it the secondary threat. But it does, I'm not trying to discount what it is and the threat that it poses. But the real threat comes from the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and its allies. The Taliban controls territory, whereas the Islamic State is operating on a cellular level in groups, in select provinces within Afghanistan. But no, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be concerned about it. But I think the Taliban, once it thinks it's finished off, that the threat of the Afghan government, recedes, it's consolidated its control. I think the days of the Islamic State's, threat to the Afghans and to, cause remember the Taliban and the Islamic State, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and its allies on one side are enemies of the Islamic State. The Islamic State threatens the Taliban's primacy on in the jihad in Afghanistan. So I think if the Taliban does ultimately turn on them, as they have in the past, the Islamic State really will be, have a minimal presence within Afghanistan. Any Islamic State supporters and followers and fighters would likely migrate to neighboring countries, such as particularly Pakistan. And you might see an increase of their recruiting in the stands as well.
Al-Qaeda and its many fingers throughout the world. And whenever Al-Qaeda or its fingers move, you must pay attention to the larger map. So I come to you, Tom, for your report about an Al-Qaeda-linked group, Guardians of Religion, attacking in Damascus, Syria. What is striking here is that Al-Qaeda is ready to go up against a regime, the Syrian regime, linked to the Russians, linked to a number of bad actors in the area. Is this in any fashion a demonstration of Al-Qaeda's strength? Or do you see this as a random act, Tom?
Well, I don't think it's a random act, but it's really we're trying to keep tabs on whether or not this is sort of a harbinger of things to come. Al-Qaeda has suffered a number of setbacks in Syria. There was a time, particularly around 2015, where Al-Qaeda looked as ascendant within the insurgency and on the battlefield, and they took over Idlib province and other territory and were really taking the fight to the Assad regime. But since the Russians increased their support for the Assad regime and the Iranians did as well, particularly in 2015 and 2016, the jihadis have been on their back foot. And Al-Qaeda has suffered serious ruptures in its chain of command and has numerous problems in terms of its infrastructure in Syria, a lot of which remains murky to this day. The group that carried this attack out in Damascus is known as Huras al-Din. It's the Guardians of Religion organization. It's led by Al-Qaeda veterans who were trained in Afghanistan pre-9/11, who helped train Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters to fight the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan prior to 9/11. They've been trying to start new operations against the Assad regime behind enemy lines. What's significant about this bombing in Damascus, if it was a bombing in Damascus, is that it's a very rare event these days. The jihadis have had a very difficult time trying to carry out significant operations there. And in this case, last week, they were able to reportedly kill a number of members of the presidential guard, which works for Assad. So it's a potentially significant attack, but we're trying to see if it leads to more.
Bill, a detail. There are several reports about assassination, the word assassination used, directed against the Afghan Air Force, which is one of the few effective ways of stopping the offensive in capitals, with the apparent withdrawal or at least a bridging of U.S. and other air support from outside. Do you link these assassinations, if that's what they are, of Afghan Air Force pilots as Taliban, as Al-Qaeda, as ISIS? Can we tell?
I make no distinction between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and then the various Al-Qaeda affiliates, allies, Taliban allies, only between the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and the Islamic State. The assassination of the Air Force officers, and I'm seeing assassinations of commandos and other key personnel. These are the elite units of the Afghan military that are limited in number and that have been effective, even if on the margins, and taking the fight to the Taliban. And the Taliban, these are most certainly Taliban / Al-Qaeda operations to reduce the effectiveness, particularly the Air Force. There's only a limited number of trained pilots as well as a limited number of airframes that the Afghan Air Force can put in the air to battle against the Taliban's advance. And every pilot lost, every airframe that is either shot down, crashes, or is taken out of operation because it's become, because of maintenance or combat damage. It's a victory for the Taliban, and it's a direct, an immediate, loss of effectiveness for the Afghan Air Force. The pilots, they're major targets for the Taliban. The Taliban wants these guys dead because they're the ones that are really having, the most effective at killing Taliban fighters.
Tom, is there an indication now that the contractors who we're told over time have been integral to the functioning of the Afghan Air Force, they have airframes that are exhausted, they need parts, are the contractors still in country or are they leaving? And in general, the contractor story, have they left Afghanistan? They were fundamental to the running of the Afghan National Army.
You know, we don't really even know how many contractors were in country before this latest offensive by the Taliban, and we don't really know exactly how many are there now. I mean, some of the public reporting on the Defense Department, some of the oversight shows the Defense Department didn't even know really how many contractors were operating in Afghanistan. So we do have indications that there is a skeleton crew of contractors that are helping the Afghan Air Force and are involved potentially in other operations, but it's really not clear to us.
Bill, I check with you about the embassy. Do we have any indication what's left at the embassy? It's said to be a fortress. Is it manned?
The embassy, it's a great question. We don't know how many embassy personnel are within Fortress Kabul. We do know there's 650 American soldiers that are protecting the embassy, and several hundred more that are at the airport, because if you got to evacuate the embassy, you got to get them to the airport to fly out. This is one of the major reasons why the loss of Bagram. Can you imagine, John, trying to evacuate thousands of Americans from Kabul as Kabul is under siege? And Afghans are going to that airport at the same point. Here's another thing we do know. The State Department issued a general, we'll call it a request or a suggestion. We do know that the U.S. Embassy in Kabul has suggested or issued a statement saying that all Americans who are in Afghanistan should leave the country immediately. I think that's a clear sign of what the U.S. State Department, how they view the security situation in Afghanistan. That is essentially pushing the panic button.
I'm speaking with Bill Raggio and Tom Jostin of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The story so far is that the Taliban is on the march. What about the Afghans and others in Kabul and the other major cities? Can they get out, given that the roads south through Pakistan are not secure, given that the airlift is not yet on the scene? And given the eligibility of people in Afghanistan, what is their eligibility to migrate? When we come back, the U.S. has increased the number of people potentially who could be evacuated if there is the airlift, if there is the time. LongWarJournal.com. That's spelled out, LongWarJournal.com, for illustration, for chronology, for updating constantly. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient unlocked. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.